Hello, Roy here. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to The Roy Green Show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Carrie Lynn McClintock is back in prison as the federal government and Correctional Service Canada backed down from the decision to move 8-year-old Tori Stafford's murderer to an Aboriginal healing lodge in Saskatchewan. She's back where she belongs. Unfortunately, she's in medium security when she should be in maximum. I spoke with Scott Newark about that, former Alberta prosecutor and former senior policy advisor to a federal minister for public safety. When I was speaking with a Correctional Service Canada spokesperson, how did they refer to you and me and everybody else who isn't in prison?
Were we non-convicted offenders residing in the community?
That's it. We were non-convicted offenders living in the community. We were already offenders. We just hadn't been convicted yet.
Well, it does sort of give you an insight into perspective, doesn't it?
Doesn't it? I mean, this was a person speaking for Correctional Service Canada and speaking to every single Canadian saying, you are just a non-convicted individual living in the community. My God.
It's the reason why keeping an eye on what's going on is so important, and why in the McClintock case, as you describe, I think the entire nation owes thanks to the Stafford family for deciding when they got the information about what had happened, which they were never told about originally, deciding to step up and speak out and expose the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because otherwise, it would have been business as usual, because they do not expect interference.
Well, not only that, Roy, but that's one of the things that I think is really important and sometimes gets overlooked is, it is, in my view, entirely appropriate that victims be shown the respect by being given the information and being allowed to have a voice, not a veto, but a voice on certain kinds of decisions in relation to the offenders that have affected them. But it's not just them as victims that benefit from that. It's all of us as a society, because that's how we gain the insights into what is actually going on inside Correctional Services of Canada. Because contrary to what Public Safety Minister Goodale was telling everybody, and still is, that, oh yeah, we always tell everybody when an offender's transferred. No, they don't. Okay? The Stafford family learned about it because 6 months after she was transferred to this healing lodge, she decided that wasn't good enough and she wanted day passes. That's how they learned about it. And, I mean, it's reflected again in the news just a couple of days ago that the child abductor, Randall Hopley, remember the case from years ago where he abducted the little 4-year-old boy, and he's actually now been released. He was designated as a long-term offender, and he's been released into Vancouver, which, by the way, Correctional Service of Canada isn't bothering to use electronic monitoring on this guy. But the family, the victim's family, was never notified, contrary to what Minister Goodale says. Now, look, I'm just starting to dig into this case, and it may be, maybe the victim's family didn't register, but this sense that we should just think everything is okay is really not appropriate. And that's why I think, well, I'm glad to see, Minister Goodale has issued the press release with what describes some of these changes, which are very similar to what you and I have been discussing over the past couple of weeks. That's a good thing. But you know what? When you're dealing with the Correctional Service of Canada, I want to see the fine print, not a press release. I want to see the amendments to the legislation or the regulations or the policy, because that's how we're going to ensure that there's real accountability.
Yeah, it's really horrific that these things happen, and they happen repeatedly. And we have to remember as well, when it comes to a court case or when it comes to a parole hearing, the victim's impact statement, which is the victim's or the victim's family's only way of expressing to the court and to the government the agony and that they experience and have experienced and will continue to experience. It's the only way that they can do it. Those victims' impact statements are made available to the offender prior to the hearing, and the offender has to sign off on the victim's impact statement. And I know that at certain times, the parole board, I believe it's the parole board, could be CSC, but I think it's the parole board, have told the victims that their impact statement was too long, so either shorten it or we'll shorten it for you.
Yeah, it's and you know, people forget it was not that long ago that victims were not even allowed to attend parole hearings. And then when they got the right to attend, they weren't allowed to speak. I remember attending a parole hearing on behalf of a victim's family, and I think I was the first person that actually did that. And the lawyer for the accused killer was objecting to my presence because she mistakenly thought I was the crime had happened in Alberta, and she mistakenly thought that I was the Alberta prosecutor, and I wasn't. And then she was saying, oh, yes, I shouldn't be allowed in the room. And I said, I wasn't the prosecutor. And the parole board guy goes, you're not allowed to speak. And I said, but that's wrong. You know, we actually have come a long way. And that's also something that I think, needs to be remembered. I remember when the victim impact statements were legislation was first introduced, and I was still a prosecutor, and I had something of a reputation of standing up for victims. And I remember a victim's family asking me one day in court, do I need to submit a victim impact statement? And I paused for a second, and I said, well, actually, if I'm doing my job, I don't think you need to.
Yeah.
Because that was the view, that is the historical view, that the Crown represents the public interest, which includes the interests of the individuals who have been victimized by the crime. And we've moved away from that, I think, in some ways, which just simply stresses the importance of victims having that the right information and having a right to the information, not a discretion, a right to the information, plus having a voice at the proceedings themselves. And again, I stress, not a veto, but a voice, because that will, I think, add a level of accountability in my experience. And the people that are considering what to do may just realize, someone's going to potentially know about this.
Yeah. I will never forget when I first found out that victim's impact statements go to the, quote, offender first. And I was speaking, you know this case very well, Michelle Edwards, who was murdered by George Lovey.
Yeah.
And Donnie Edwards, the former goaltender for the Buffalo Sabres and for Team Canada, and his wife, Tanis, were in touch with me, and they were on this program. And Donnie pointed out that their victim's impact statement was going to go to George Lovey, and he would peruse it at his leisure. He would have legal representation as well. And they would then decide whether they were satisfied with it or not. And if Lovey wasn't satisfied with it, then, well, you have to change it. This is just...
It's not... He can make an objection to it. He doesn't have an absolute veto over it. And the principle behind that, of course, is that it is, you know, potentially evidence that is being used against the individual, so there is an obligation on disclosure.
Well, then call it something else.
It is factually disclosure of the information that's going to be.
You know what I'm saying? Then don't call it a victim's impact statement. If it's a victim's impact statement, then let it be the victim's impact statement. And if it's going to be something else, then call it something else.
There's even rules in the legislation as well, too, and I think appropriately that the body has the right to determine if the presence of the individuals or the people making statements is going to be contrary to the process itself. In other words, that people are going to get out of control or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, I think it's okay to have those kinds of general provisions, because that is a something I don't know that I've ever heard of. So in other words, it's the body's ability to maintain decorum. But you can't stress enough the importance of these people having a legal right to the information and having a legal right to a voice. It not only is a sign of respect for them, but it's also an accountability and public safety protection for the rest of us.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the Edwards case, it was Michelle Edwards' mother and father that George Lovey murdered.
Yeah.
And he is still, I believe he's still in prison. But you never know, because we're all just Well, we're non-convicted individuals living in the community.
Well, look at, as I say, look at this Randall Hopley case.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the one people will probably remember it from years ago because it was such a high-profile case.
Yeah.
That guy should never have been on the streets. He was a career criminal child molester. He was on bail. He got charged with new offenses. He was released on bail. He got charged with a new offense. Nobody did anything. And now, as it turns out, and I did some digging around a little bit on this, he's been released because he was declared a long-term offender. Oh, and by the way, he was given extra credit for the time that he was denied bail because he committed all these new crimes while on bail. It's ridiculous, okay? And because he was declared a long-term offender, he served his entire sentence, okay? You know how rare that is.
Right.
And then he's now subject to a 10-year supervision order. But at the time, the Crown, quite properly, asked for him to be designated as a dangerous offender, which would have meant that he had an indefinite sentence, which he was not eligible to apply for parole for 7 years. But the judge at the time decided that actually there wasn't sufficient evidence to decide that he was dangerous. Really? Guess what? You know, now like 5 years later, 6 years later, Correctional Service of Canada decided he was too dangerous to ever release, and so now he's stuck in a community facility somewhere in Vancouver, and for reasons they've never explained, they don't have electronic monitoring on them, so it's up to the Vancouver police, who just issued a public statement warning people that this guy is now in their community.
You know what I'm thinking of when you're talking about this? Joseph Fredericks.
Yeah, yeah.
Joseph Fredericks, who was declared and assessed psychologically, homicidal pedophile who enjoyed murdering children more than he enjoyed torturing children more than he enjoyed murdering them. That was the report. He was imprisoned, and the psychiatrist during the trial had said that he should never be released unless this doctor was contacted first. So the parole board called the, you know the story, called the doctor's office. He was out. He was on vacation. And his assistant told the parole board representative that, you know, the doctor's not around. But they felt that they'd done their due diligence because they called
the
office and they sprang the guy.
Yeah.
And then they had no supervision, and he abducted Christopher Stevenson. So.
Well, you know, Roy, that is another example of that case being used. And again, thanks to the Stevenson family and the lawyer that they had, Tim Danson.
Tim Danson,
did a great job as well, too. And I know you were involved in it.
Yeah.
Essentially exposing this, there was an inquest into how Christopher died, and that is where all of the preventive peace bonds came from, these long-term offender supervision orders. That's where it came from. We actually made systemic improvements by looking, you know, at the case to see, okay, what needs to be done. That's the case in the McClintock case. I just want to see the fine print about it, and I think as well, too, in the case that I was just mentioning, this guy Randall Hopley, we need to do that kind of systemic review as well, too.
Yeah, and without
not
you,
just to point fingers, but to learn lessons.
And without you, we would still be laboring under the misapprehension that McClintock was not going to be eligible for a parole opportunity for another 16 years.
Yeah.
That you found out a few weeks ago that it was 6 years. So
it was on your show. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Let's take a break. When we come back, let's talk about the Canada Border Services Agency.
Yes.
Committing to expedited deportations. What does that mean? Scott Newark will talk to us about that when we come back.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Back to Scott Newark in the minutes we have left. So CBSA, Canada Border Services Agency, says it is going to expedite, that may be my word, not theirs, deportations. What's this about?
Well, it's an interesting story. It was released through a leak that by, I'm sure, remarkable coincidence, the CBC happened to get, that said that there was an internal policy that CBSA was going to intended to increase significantly the number of persons a year that were actually removed from Canada. It's one thing if you're ordered removed, that's quite different than actually being removed. And they were what they were looking for was to get it up to around 10,000 people a year, which is almost a 25 to 35% increase in the current number of removals. And as you and I have discussed before, and I've certainly written about for a while, a big part of the problem, in fact, a major part of the problem here, is the inefficiency of our system, the repeated appeals, the multiple exemptions and exceptions, and people can just drag this out forever. And also, people we have, unfortunately, a history of people who've been ordered removed who then just don't show up when they're supposed to show up. The Auditor General, the last report, I believe, was back in 2011, and there was 44,000 outstanding arrest warrants for people who'd been ordered removed.
Hang on a second. 44,000, that's not just a number we can slide by.
Wow. This obviously, I think, has a political aspect to it. It's a welcome development, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But there's some real questions to it because, again, gee whiz, what a coincidence. A couple of days later, the Immigration Minister, Ahmad Hussein, introduces the new immigration targets, which, as you may know, significantly increase the number of people that we are going to bring into the country.
Right.
And the ever sort of cynical, ever suspicious prosecutor in me kind of looks at this and goes, is this like just to distract attention? Because...
And I only have a few seconds, Scott.
Yeah. The bottom line is we have a system that is dysfunctional and the system itself needs to be fixed. And you want to make sure that we're actually deporting the criminals and the security people who are inadmissible,
right,
as opposed to the low-hanging fruit of overstaying visas.
So go to Frontline Online, and you can see Scott's piece. Canada Border Services Agency says it will substantially increase deportations. Let's keep an eye on what actually happens.
Yes.
Frontline Online. Mr. Newark, always a pleasure. Thank you for the time, Scott.
All right, sir. See you. Bye-bye.
All the best. If you want to hear more, subscribe to The Roy Green Show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you find your favorites. And if you like what you hear, leave us a review and tell a friend. I'm Roy Green. Have a great weekend.